Welcome to Heart with Anna, featuring your host, Anna Jaworski. Our program is a program designed to empower the CHD, or congenital heart defect, community. Our program may also help families who have children who are chronically ill by bringing information and encouragement to you in order to become an advocate for your community. Now, here is Anna Jaworski.
Welcome to the sixth episode of the second season of Heart to Heart with Anna, a show for the congenital heart defect community. Our purpose is to empower members of our community with resources, support, and advocacy information. No matter what country you live in, there's a special subset of citizens who have accepted the job of defending that country. Being part of a country's military sets people apart from their civilian peers. What happens to families who've accepted the job of protecting its country and its country's citizens when their own families have to deal with the crisis of having a child born with a congenital heart defect? In preparing for this show, I looked on the internet for information about military families and congenital heart defects. I was so happy to see that UnitedHealthcare and TRICARE had a page pop up right away, which detailed that they have a congenital heart disease program, which provides services to help patients who are having surgical repair or transplant surgery related to congenital heart defects by coordinating facilities and specialists so appropriate and complete medical care are received. The goals of the case managers are to match you with the select few health caregivers who are qualified to perform intricate congenital heart defect surgery, to provide education and information that allows you to make informed decisions about your health care, to review the military and community resources that are available to you, and to support patients and family members through every aspect of the surgical transplant process. Their page includes links to TRICARE and other resources that will be of assistance to military families. I will include a link to this on my website, hearttoheartwithanna.com. I wish I had information for other countries dealing with this issue, since I know we have so many listeners in other countries, but most of you know that I'm located in Texas in the United States. I hope that we can have a show in the future that addresses this topic for families in our heart community who are outside of the United States. Today we have two moms who are also military spouses. One of our guests grew up in a military home and then married a soldier. Our other guest, I just found out, also grew up in a military home and married a United States Marine. Both of these ladies have children with congenital heart defects, and they understand the importance of being educated about what services are available for their families, and especially their children with congenital heart defects. I'm so happy that we're able to bring this show, How Military Families Deal with Having a Child with a Congenital Heart Defect, on the air. To discuss this topic, our guests today are Heart Moms Andrea Quirk and Shelley McIntyre Brewer. Andrea Quirk married her husband Joe in February of 2008, and they have two amazing children, Caleb, born July 23, 2010, and Callie, born December 19, 2013. Joe is a Huey pilot in the United States Marine Corps. When Andrea was pregnant with Caleb, they learned that he would be born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. After receiving a negative prognosis at a local hospital, they sought a second opinion at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, also known as CHOP. Caleb was born at CHOP and has had his Norwood Glenn and Fontan procedures there, as well as two heart catheterizations. They are very fortunate that Caleb has thrived and is doing amazingly well. This year, he played basketball, soccer, and t-ball. Andrea loves seeing him participate in activities that weren't guaranteed when he was diagnosed. Andrea and Joe have a heart-healthy daughter, Callie. Captain Joseph Quirk is currently deployed to Afghanistan. Andrea helped create and facilitate the baby meals program for her husband's squadron. We'll meet Shelley McIntyre Brewer later in our show. Welcome to Heart with Anna. Andrea?
Thank you for having me, Anna.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. This is a really important topic for us to discuss today. So you already shared about the importance of seeking a second opinion in your introduction. I was really happy to see that you weren't afraid to do that. So can you please share with us some other challenges that you have faced having a child with a congenital heart defect and dealing with military insurance?
Anna, we have honestly been very fortunate when it comes to our dealings with TRICARE, which doesn't ever seem to be the norm. Our main issue, aside from a few billing errors that were thankfully quickly fixed were is that we've moved to three different bases in the local area here in North Carolina, semi-local area here in North Carolina, and they've tried to switch Caleb's pediatrician from a civilian doctor to the military treatment facility. The main issue with that, well, a couple issues with that, is that a lot of military doctors, most military doctors, do not have experience with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And whenever dealing with a military treatment facility, it's very hard to get in for same-day appointments, and a lot of people are just referred out to the emergency room. So if you call for an appointment, they won't have any for a few days. They'll say, just take your kid to the emergency room. Well, as you know, you don't want to take a heart child to the emergency room every time you have a problem and have them go out and have them be in with the germs of the emergency room environment. So I need a doctor for my son when he needs to be seen, not 2 days later, and I don't want to take him to the emergency room every time. So with a little pushing from me and my husband and us kind of sticking our feet in the ground and saying, no, we need to keep our son's pediatrician, we have received waivers to keep him. We do drive an hour to see that pediatrician because he's located in the area where the first base was when Caleb was born. But definitely well worth the drive to have somebody who is experienced in heart defects and also who has known Caleb's history from the first time that we brought him home from Philadelphia.
Yes, it's so nice not to have to go over a complex history over and over again with strangers, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, every time we have gone to the emergency room with Caleb, I'm having to explain what hypoplastic left heart syndrome is to nurses and to doctors. So to have somebody who knows what's going on, that he can look at him, he can know if there's a problem, and he's in contact with his team in Philadelphia as well as his local cardiologist, we really needed to keep that for his health. So.
Absolutely. I think that continuity of care is what helps our children to have a better outcome.
Absolutely. And they grow to love their doctors. It's amazing. He actually loves going to the doctors after all he's been through. And he knows Dr. Mattal is who he will go to for if he's sick. Dr. Cotton is his cardiologist. He knows who they are. He knows what they do. And he looks forward to seeing them.
I think it's such a blessing when you have a doctor that your child totally relates to. Alex was so lucky. He had the same pediatric cardiologist for years. And, in fact, his pediatric cardiologist had a son who swam with my older son. So we sometimes saw him at swim meets.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of nice, you know, when you're not only seeing somebody when you're in the doctor's office. So it also made him more human. And knowing that he had his own sons, I think he was able to relate to my son very, very well. And it was such a blessing for us to have someone like that. So you're right. It is worth the hour drive. I also have an hour drive or had an hour drive to get Alex to his cardiologist. So I can totally relate to that. So what kind of help have you received from the military regarding Caleb's special needs?
The main thing that we had from the get-go is, like I said before, we had a ton of support from Joe's Command when I was pregnant with Caleb and when he had his Norwood and his Glenn. Joe was able to be with us. Now, in the military setting, if there is a mission essential reason for them to not be around, obviously that takes precedence. But thankfully for us, Joe did not have anything going on with his job at that time. So his command was very supportive of him being in Philadelphia when Caleb was born, and throughout the time in the hospital, his commanding officer at the time had a child who spent a lot of time in the NICU when he was born. So he understood the importance of that time that you get with your child when they're in critical situations. So we definitely received a lot of support that way. Another part of the military is that there's the Exceptional Family Members Program, and it's a program that's designed to help families that have special needs to ensure that they're getting the care that they need, and also so that they do not get stationed at places that they cannot receive adequate care. So we have to be a part of that program. Now, as far as some of the arms of that program, we don't get actually any services for Caleb just because he's been doing so well that he hasn't had any specific special needs. But that program is there for families that do need it. But unfortunately, I don't have a lot of information about different ways that other heart families have been helped by it, because we're only in that program so that we don't get stationed at places that we can't receive care for Caleb.
That's excellent. That brings me to my next question, because I've lived near Fort Hood since I was 13 years old, so for quite a few years, and I noticed that a lot of times people were stationed at Fort Hood if they had children with learning problems, because we were known for having a really great special education program. So it seems like at least the Marines are very sensitive to the fact that not every place, like you wouldn't want to be stationed necessarily in South Dakota if you have a child with a heart defect because there's not a program right there. So it seems like they do make exceptions and try and station your husband or your wife, if your wife is the one in the military, at a facility where you'll be close to care for your child.
Right? Well, not necessarily. They do try to make that possible. We can't travel to for the Marine Corps. We can't travel to Okinawa because of Caleb's heart defect. But what can happen is that since my husband's fit to travel there and Caleb is not, he could be sent on what's called an unaccompanied tour. So he could still, if the mission needs him somewhere, he still can go. We as a family might not be able to go though.
Okay, but you would be in military housing, someplace where your son could receive care while your husband was off serving the country.
So, if my husband got orders right now to Okinawa and we had to stay behind, we could stay in our current home and live here and still receive treatment where Caleb receives treatment.
Okay, that's really good to know because I know there are probably some families out there who have just found out they're going to have a baby with a heart defect and either the mother or the father is in the military and they're wondering how are we going to deal with this. So that information is really, really helpful. Andrea, what is the most difficult thing about being a military wife when you have both a heart healthy and a child with a critical congenital heart defect?
For me, it's definitely the fear of something happening to Caleb while Joe is deployed. I know that because of his job and because of the mission that he has, he couldn't come home for everything. So if it was definitely a critical situation, he would probably be granted permission to come home. But a lot of things would just fall on me. So it would be a matter of coordinating care for my heart-healthy daughter and getting to Philadelphia for him to have care at CHOP. It's definitely, it weighs heavy on you that, okay, well, if something happened, what do I do? Now, we are blessed with a wonderful family support and lots of friend support that I know we would have a lot of help, but it would definitely be hard to not have him close by if Caleb was going through something serious.
Yes, I can imagine that would be so unbelievably difficult, but I'm glad to know that you have a network of friends and you have family that live close by or that would drop everything for you if you really needed them.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that the case?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
It's good to know that you have that.
We actually have a little bit of both. We have in the Philadelphia area, most of my dad's extended family lives up there, so I know they would be a great supportive help for that. My mother-in-law would also probably drop everything and come and help if we needed her help. So we have a little bit of both on that end. We don't have a lot of family in this area. I do have a cousin who lives about 2 hours away, but that's the closest family I have. The rest live, 12-plus hours away. So, but we have a lot of support, people that would drop things and people that are in the local Philadelphia area that would be able to help us if we needed.
That's really good to know. Andrea, what advice would you give to other military parents who are told that their child will be born with a congenital heart defect?
To advocate for excellent care for your child. When it comes to TRICARE, if they are not budging and not giving you authorizations for the hospitals that you want to go to, you can switch your family to TRICARE standard. There is more out-of-pocket expenses, but to me it would be completely worth it to get to the hospital where I wanted my child to have treatment. Higher volume centers, obviously, if you want to get there. So definitely fight TRICARE as much as you can on it. And if they won't budge, switch over to standard. And the advice I would give to any person that has a child with any defect or sickness is to always seek out second opinions. Don't settle for what a doctor tells you just because they're a doctor. Doctors make mistakes also. They're only human. If we listened to the first doctor we had talked to when we got pregnant, when we were diagnosed prenatally with Caleb's hypoplastic left heart syndrome, he wouldn't even be here right now. We had a very negative prognosis with him, and he is thriving and doing amazing at almost 4 years old. So seek second opinions. They may might make you change your mind about where you get your treatment, or they might just give you even more confidence that you are in the perfect place for your child.
That's excellent. I had the same situation where my son was given a dismal prognosis, although he wasn't diagnosed until after he was born. And they told me to take him home to love him for what little time he had left.
Mm-hmm.
And that was devastating. I had already been nursing him and taking care of him for 2 months And the thought of taking him home to just let him die in my arms was inconceivable. So
Absolutely.
My husband and I said, that's not an option. Okay, so what's plan B?
and that's exactly what we did.
Yeah, our son was so sick, though, that we couldn't, he was too sick to transport any place else. So I was lucky that the surgeon was willing to work with us. You know, he just had to let us know that he considered Alex's chances of survival to be about 5%. And I said, that's better than zero. And so we were willing to go for it. And here he is 19 years later. In fact, he'll be 20 in August of 2014. So it's hard to believe that we had to fight like we did. And had we just listened to the doctor and not fought for him, and this is what you were saying, advocate, 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 I totally agree with you there, that we have to be the voice for our children because they have no voice yet.
We were lucky to find out when we were pregnant with him about his heart defect because when we went to that first doctor, we were told that he had a very restricted or intact atrial septum. He would not survive the surgeries. If he did, he would have a very, very poor quality of life and that we should abort him. And we were told that we could no longer do that in North Carolina, but we had 1 week to drive to Virginia. And we said, well, that is not an option. We left that doctor's office and we never looked back.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. Good for you. And I'm so happy to hear that Caleb is doing well. Well, thank you so much, Andrea, for coming on the show and sharing your experiences and advice with us. Now it's time
thank
for
you
a
so
commercial
much for
break.
Having me.
Oh, well, don't leave because you're going to be in the last segment with both Shelley and me, and we'll also take any callers who have any questions for us. So coming up next, we do have another military mom to a child with a congenital heart defect. Find out how this spouse of a captain in the United States Army not only has dealt with her own daughter's issues, but how she has reached out to help other military families like her own when we return to Heart with Anna.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, A Handbook for Parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Welcome back to our show, Heart to Heart with Anna, a show for the congenital heart defect community. Today we are talking with heart moms Andrea Quirk and Shelley McIntyre Brewer about how military families deal with having a child with a congenital heart defect. We just finished talking with Andrea about her experience with having a son born with a critical congenital heart defect and how the military has helped her through her ordeal. Now we will turn our attention to Shelley McIntyre Brewer. Shelley McIntyre Brewer advocates for military families nationally as founder of Soldiers List. Her daughter, Lorelei, has HLHS, and her sons, Kevin and Killian, also have special needs, propelling her to empower military families to take control of their children's health needs. Married to Army Captain Stephen Brewer, she has been recognized by the President of the United States with the Presidential Citizens Award for Exemplary Deeds of Service for their country, was the 2008 Military Spouse of the Year, and received the Maryland Governor's Citation for her advocacy work, as well as other accolades. She is dedicated to educating others of their rights and responsibilities as a special needs caregiver. Her efforts come from her 35 years of experience living the military life and learning to not only survive, but thrive in a life that is filled with medical appointments, procedures, surgeries, and the uncertainty unique to having heart kids. Thanks for coming on Heart to Heart with Anna, Shelley.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so happy that we are having a chance to discuss this issue, and I have a feeling you're going to be able to echo a lot of the information that Andrea was so kind to share with us at the first segment. You have been such a strong force for parents becoming their children's strongest advocates and for helping them learn how to take charge of their children's health care needs. Is there a certain event that triggered that passion in you?
Well, I grew up in the military community with my father being in the Air Force, and so our family has had many generations worth of military involvement. So my desire to want to help military families stems from that. And then, of course, the loss of our son and the birth of our daughter was another huge proponent for getting me involved, specifically when Hurricane Katrina hit. And I saw all of the kids down in the Gulf Coast region not able to access the care that they needed when they needed it. And that's really what spurred my advocacy.
So it sounds like you have been an advocate probably since you were a young girl, growing up in a military family, and then marrying into the military as well has just continued that passion for you.
Yes, we have a motto in our family that we are to leave each day better than what it started and that we were put on earth to serve others.
Oh, that's beautiful. Leave the world a little bit better each day. I like that. That's a beautiful motto to live by. What right do you think military families have that they're most unaware of?
I would second Andrea's comments that most military families do not realize that they actually have the ability to choose where their children will receive care. A lot of families unknowingly accept what is given to them as their PCM, which would be your primary care manager, and your treatment facility, whether it be military or civilian. A lot of military families completely accept what is given to them when they really have the right to choose what provider is going to be caring for their children.
Well, when Andrea was talking about that earlier and she talked about switching from TRICARE to, I believe she said TRICARE Standard, she made it sound like then there would be more out-of-pocket expenses. Do you think that's one of the reasons why people just stick with whatever they're told that is available to them?
I absolutely do. And the reality is that in some cases that will hold true, in other cases it will not. For example, the family currently lives here in Pennsylvania, and our Medicaid program is absolutely wonderful. So they actually will cover what TRICARE does not in our situation. Other states, you may or may not qualify for the Medicaid program, and thereby you will need to take out a little bit of out-of-pocket expenses. Plus, there are programs, however, that are out there, like the MOA, the Military Officers Association of America. They have a supplemental insurance program that's very nominal in its fees, and it will pick up the extra tabs too. So there are always other avenues to take, and being able to research that is key, which is why you have us talking to you today.
Exactly. Can you repeat that again? It was Military Officers...
Yes, it's the Military Officers Association of America has a supplementary program to help to cover any unexpected costs should you choose to use TRICARE Standard.
Okay, and you called that MOA. That's why I was thinking,
mm-hmm.
Okay, what was
MOA.
The next word that you said? There's two
yep.
A's in there.
MOA.
Okay.
Yes.
MOAA. So if you are in the military and you're looking for some extra help, this is a good place for you to contact someone.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think military families can do to be better educated about their rights?
I think that they should be aware that you have programs that are on post that you can go to be able to receive information, but you also have just as many programs out there, such as United Way. Everybody has a United Way that you can call up, and they're often hooked up to the military community, and they can give a lot of information as well to be able to support whatever endeavor you are about to undergo. And so getting out there and not being afraid of asking questions is the best way to empower a family for a successful journey through this heart military world.
I think a lot of people don't even know who they would begin asking questions to. Where do you start your journey?
When I was teaching, I always used to tell my students, ask yourself first, ask a neighbor second, and then ask somebody out in the community. And typically, if you take that route, then you will find the answer. So, for example, if you know of some kind of an organization that you've worked with in the past, go to that organization. You know, of course, what you think of first would be something like the American Heart Association. See how they can help you, and then ask a neighbor, ask somebody on Facebook, ask someone in the social media world, have you ever come across this? And then they can usually give you some local or national or international groups that can help out with the situation. And then go out and do a reach out into the community if you can't find anything out from there. They say, you know, 1 in 100 to, you know, whatever the statistic is at this particular point, because it always seems to be changing. children are diagnosed with congenital heart defects. Those kids, they have parents, and those parents have been through it. So if you ask, you might be surprised. You might be sitting next to somebody who has a kid with a heart defect.
That is so true. And you never know where you're going to meet people. I was at the Texas Library Association conference one year, and I was standing in line to get food during our break, and I struck up a conversation with the woman next to me, who, of course, was a librarian, and she asked me what I was doing there. I told her I was an author, and she asked me what I wrote about. So I told her I write books for families who have children with heart defects, and she gasped, and she said, my brother was born with a heart defect. And that started us into a huge conversation, which was really surprising. I didn't expect the very first person I talked to at the Texas Library Association conference to be a person who actually had someone in her family with a heart defect. So I totally agree with you. Starting with yourself, your family, your neighbors. And then I love what you said about Facebook. There are so many resources on Facebook and on LinkedIn. The world is just open to everyone who has a computer nowadays. And if you don't have a computer yourself, you can always go to a public library that has a computer and get on the internet to find information.
You have in the military the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation, which is MWR, Morale, Welfare, and Recreation. And those facilities also provide computers for dependents of service members so that you can access that information as well.
Oh, good. That's really good to know. Well, I also like what you said about the United Way. I bet a lot of people don't know that that is something that is potentially open to them. Can you tell me some of the other organizations that can help military families?
Well, Andrea can obviously speak to the Semper Fi Fund. They are absolutely phenomenal, and I can't speak more highly of them. For the rest of us who are not in the Marines, there are all sorts of different groups that are out there. And, of course, you have the Congenital Heart Information Network, TCHIN, and then you have the Morale, Welfare, Recreation. She spoke of EFMP, which is the Exceptional Family Member Program. And I wanted to clarify that EFMP actually was not created to support the children and their needs. It actually stemmed historically from the necessity to take care of service members, family members, so that the service member was able to do their job. So she had alluded to unaccompanied tours. The idea was we're not going to send the kid to a place where the kid is going to end up potentially getting very, very sick or dying on our watch. So it's actually more to protect them than to protect the child. And I think that's really important for people to understand so that when they are contacting EFMP, they don't think that they're going to fix all of their problems. They may have some programs they can offer to help with, but they're essentially there for the active duty service member to continue to accomplish his or her mission. It is a mandatory enrollment program, as she said. So if you do have a child with any type of a need, educational, psychological, or physical, they are by UCMJ, the military code of law, they must be enrolled in that program or it could have negative effects on the service member's career.
So is every service member educated about that, or is that something someone's commander would come and say, okay, now that you've had this child that's having this problem, don't forget, you need to sign up for this program, or is it automatic?
It is not automatic. It is something that should be covered by command briefings. Every unit has command briefings that the active duty service member must partake in, and then from there, they are supposed to impart that information. What I found through my experience is that people either are not explained the program exactly how it should be explained, or they become confused, or some people just straight up decide, I don't want to affect my career, and so they try to avoid getting into it, which I really highly discourage.
Will they have a negative response from their commander if they are enrolled in that program?
It depends on who your command is. So for the first two open heart surgeries, she said she had a lot of really great support. And then with the Fontan, you know, it's a little different. And the same thing is going to happen with any time you meet a different personality, they're going to react to a situation in a different way. Our personal experience is that people have legitimately tried to care about where they put Lorelei to make sure that she would be okay. And sometimes that meant, as is currently the case, that we are not able to live with my husband. And so that is them trying to do their jobs, which I appreciate. Andrea and I were actually just discussing this. I do appreciate it because somebody is saying, I care about your daughter and I want to keep her safe. And yes, it may be construed that you know, EFMP didn't serve our family well, but in essence, it really did because there was somebody saying this facility really isn't going to take care of this kid the way that that child needs that care.
Well, and also, we need your husband in this other location, and we feel that he'll be okay separated from your family, that you all can handle this so that his needs are met and your daughter's needs are met. Is that true?
Not really. I mean, really, it's mission readiness. Yeah, it's really just mission readiness. It's can he do his job? Can she go with him? If the answer is no, then the answer is no. And so he continues
so
on for his mission.
Right, and they're not going to sacrifice his job for his daughter's problems, is what I was alluding to, is that they're going to expect him to continue to do his job and give him the opportunity to do his job, even if it means being separated from the family.
Yes, but I want to clarify that it doesn't mean at the expense of her. It's she still is getting the care that she needs. She just is not able to be with him. Being separate,
right.
It still is. The idea is that she will get the care she needs. It's at the expense of nothing except for the emotional toll that it takes on us to be separated, which we all already know happens in the military. So we know that it can happen, and as long as we are prepared for it and we take care of our family and try to be together as much as possible, then it helps us to be able to endure that. But I wouldn't say that I don't think anybody is compromising Lorelei's health there. For his mission readiness.
Right, and that was my point. I guess I didn't say it very clearly, but it seems like there's a group, and it's this EMFP, EFMP. EFMP that is making sure that her needs are being taken care of, even if it does mean that your husband and you have to be separated. Like you said, to me, that's one of the biggest sacrifices that military families have to make, and that is separation. It's not uncommon, whether your child is healthy or not, it's not uncommon for military families to be separated at one point or another.
Correct.
Sometimes even for a year or longer, which is really, really hard to see families go through that. And I think that's why it's so awesome that you see military groups come together. I've seen officer wives groups that come together and they take care of each other, especially when there's a deployment or especially when somebody is separated from their spouse.
Yes, there are support groups. And as we spoke about earlier, Andrea's husband is in his particular job that he's in right now. They have their group of support. But it is important to note that not all military personnel have that kind of a support group, because we have to acknowledge that we have the reserves and National Guard and people like my husband who can go on jobs that are considered to be PROFIS, and that's where they are just attached to another group. We really have no support system, so we are off on our own, as are a lot of our National Guard and Reserve guys as well. So it's important to acknowledge that there are a lot of people in the military who are not able to use the groups that have been formulated, and that is a constant struggle with the military to try and make sure that there is something out there. And unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't happen. So that's why it's so important to have shows like this where we can plug people in when they are kind of in those situations.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because to me, that's one of the values of this show, is that we can let people know you're not alone, there is hope, and there are groups out there. You're right. Maybe there isn't a specific group for each unit in the military or each part of our military, but I think that's where having groups on Facebook, having groups with that are meetup groups, or having other local groups in your community is so important. Don't you think so, Shelley?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Shelley, can you answer this question for me? Because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, do children of military families qualify for Social Security income or for Medicaid?
That will depend on where you live, where you are stationed, and it also depends on the active duty service member's income, as well as if the spouse is employed or not. It's going to vary just like it does in the civilian world. It's a big question that we all know gets asked all the time, will my kid qualify for this? And the answer to that is there's no good answer to that. You really need to make an appointment with your JAG office, which is the Judge Advocate General. Sit down with them and let them know, I'm interested in doing SSI, I'm interested in doing Medicaid, will my family qualify? If they are not able to answer the question for you, they will help you arrange a meeting with a civilian lawyer who is up on the laws of each in particular state. And please remember that every time that you have a permanent change of station or a PCS, you're going to have to meet with a JAG attorney every time you move to a new state, because that will change, and sometimes you'll qualify and sometimes you won't. We qualify here in Pennsylvania for CARE. We did not in North Carolina. We did not in Maryland. So you have to take the initiative, and as Andrea said before, advocate to make sure that you guys are getting the care that you need.
So it sounds to me like most military families really need to keep some kind of binder or notebook where they have numbers and names of people who can help them. Like you were saying, the JAG program, that there are certain places that they can reach out for help, and it doesn't matter what state they're in, that program will, or those people will be at those facilities to give you the kind of information you need. But really, it's on you. It's on the parents to ask questions, to make sure that they are being a strong advocate for their children, and to keep up with it all.
That is correct. I wrote an article, I believe in 2009, that was published by Military Spouse Magazine regarding a book that I call the Book of Everything. And essentially, it is a book that contains all of the documents and all of the phone numbers, any resources that you would possibly need. And it's a comprehensive book that you carry with you everywhere that you go. And I recommend that it be put into a lockbox that's fireproof, so that no matter where you are, you have access to the appropriate powers of attorney, the appropriate phone numbers for specialists, pediatricians, for your neighbor next door, whatever you need, all in one centralized location. And you also keep a record of those whom you've contacted so that you're able to have access to the information and be able to proffer that information if someone asks questions for you. And that is, I mean, that's not even a military thing, to be honest with you. I think everybody should just do that, because it's a good idea to have everything at your fingertips.
It is, and I had a binder just like that when Alex was little. And you're right, I had a log, so that every time I called the hospital, the clinic, his pediatrician, his pediatric cardiologist, anybody that I talked to, but especially when we were preparing for surgery, when I talked to the nurse that was in charge of preparing him for the surgery and scheduling his catheterization and all of that, I kept detailed notes, because a lot of times you're sleep deprived at this time, and it's easy to forget things, or it's easy to be confused, and you're having a lot of new terms and new jargon thrown at you that you may not know exactly what it means. And if you do need to get help, it is really beneficial to take out this log and say, well, look, I called this doctor and this nurse, and I spoke to this person on this day, and they promised me that, and I said I would do this, and I did do it, but I haven't received this particular thing. And having that log, you know exactly when and who you spoke to, so that if there is a conflict, which there frequently is, you can get some kind of resolution.
Absolutely.
And I'm not military.
Specifically,
I'm not military,
so. Absolutely. Well, the one amendment that I would add to everything that's specific to heart families is there's a particular form called the DD 2792. And that particular form is your EFMP, the Exceptional Family Member Enrollment Form. And on it, it has every single diagnosis that your child has. It has your husband's information or your wife's information, and it has all of the information that would be pertinent to emergencies. I recommend that people grab that, keep a copy on hand, put it in your book of everything, and also just put it in a place where you have easy access to it no matter what, so that if there's an ER visit or something emergent, you can grab that packet and you can hand it off to whoever that provider is, and they have an easy access way to get your information as quickly as possible. So that's one military tip that I wish that everybody had. Just carry around those DD2792s, and they it will be the answer to.
I think we need one for the civilian too.
Well, I've used it at CHOP so many times. I've just handed it over to them and said, this is what they currently have on file. And then they're like, thank you, because it lists all the medications and everything, and it has to be updated anytime there's a change. So when you do that, it just makes things so much easier, and everybody appreciates organization.
Everybody does. And, you know, another thing that really helps with organization that I've started to utilize now that my son is an adult and he doesn't always live at home with me is we have a flash drive that has his latest echo, his Holter monitor, the last year or so's worth of notes from his doctor, his last surgical documentation. Everything's on that one flash drive. So if he has to see somebody emergently, he can give them that flash drive and they have all the information they need. They don't have to wait for information to be sent to them. So I would recommend if parents can keep up with it, and I know it's hard, especially when the kids are young, but just try and get that information yourself. You can get access. It's a lot easier when your child is a minor. When your child becomes a majority age, then they have to request the information. But to keep everything in one place, I love the book of everything. That's an awesome idea.
And aside from the flash drive, a side note to the flash drive that's actually very, very important is the military does not, they do not condone the use of flash drives in a lot of situations for operational security. It's very easy to do damage on their computer systems. So we also have a flash drive, but I would highly recommend that if you have the flash drive, you also have a hard copy because the military facilities will not allow you to use the flash drive in their systems.
Well, that's good to know. That stinks, though, because you can't see a Holter. You can't see the readout. Well, yeah, I guess you could for a Holter, but I guess I'm thinking like the echoes or some of the other more video-like.
I concur, but it's understandable why they feel the way that they do. And as long as you have access to the contact information, which would be on that form that I was mentioning before, as long as we have the contact information, then that's the important thing. But just make sure you have the hard copy and not just the flash drive because they won't take that.
That's really good to know. And you're right. If you have the contact information, if they really do need to see the last echo or some surgical notes or something that you may not have every little bit of that, they can always contact the facility and get it straight from them. And, you know, people are so quick nowadays about being able to send information that it's not as much a problem as it used to be 20 years ago when I was first starting to go through this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, thank you so much for sharing this. We need to take a quick commercial break, but don't go far because we do have our question and answer session, and we'll give you and Andrea a chance to share some more experiences and advice when we return to Heart with Anna.
Anna Jaworski has spoken around the world at congenital heart defect events, and she is available as a keynote or guest speaker for your event. Go to hearttoheartwithanna.com to learn more about booking Anna for your event. You can also find out more about the radio program, keep up to date with CHD resources and information about advocacy groups, as well as read Anna's weekly blog. Anna wants you to stay well-connected and participate in the CHD community. Visit hearttoheartwithanna.com today.
Welcome back to our show, Heart to Heart with Anna, a show for the congenital heart defect community. Today we are talking with Heart Moms, Andrea Quirk and Shelley McIntyre-Brewer, about how military families deal with having a child with a congenital heart defect. We just finished talking with Shelley about her experience growing up in a military family and now raising a family herself with a husband who's a captain in the Army. And we have also spoken with Andrea about her experiences Also, growing up in the military, but being married to a Marine and having a child with a critical congenital heart defect. So I want to thank both Andrea and Shelley for coming on Heart to Heart with Anna to talk about this very, very important issue. I know there are many members of our congenital heart defect community who will be able to relate to these stories or experiences and who will be empowered by what you, Andrea, and Shelley have shared with us today. So now we will take questions from our listening audience. Because we are pre-recording this show, members of our listening audience are people who have told me on our event page on Facebook that they were going to listen to the show and who have been invited to share their experiences or questions with us. So if you are interested in being a guest or calling into the show, please frequently check our Facebook page and our website, hearttoheartwithanna.com, for information about upcoming shows. So here we are in the question and answer section, and Andrea and Shelley, I'll give you a moment to say hello to each other if you'd like to, and to ask each other a question if you have a question for each other.
Hi, I just appreciated everything that Andrea said. I thought she did an awesome job representing the Marines for us.
And I agree. Shelley, you did an amazing job, and I'm so glad you clarified the ESMP program. I was trying to put that out the best way I could, and because we don't utilize any additional services in there, I definitely, you put it out there the way I wanted to, so I'm glad that you clarified that.
Yeah, and I knew you understood it. It was just, it's one of those things where it's just so tedious, and I just wanted to clarify, just to make sure we don't have somebody going, you didn't get it right, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely, and I think that it is always important for military family members to remember that all the services that are at the base, although they can benefit families, it is to make our husbands or wives' jobs seamless, to allow them to do what they're supposed to do and to make sure that they are mission ready. And that is exactly what the ESMP program is, their goal is. So they do help families, but that's not their main goal.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a question from one of our listeners, and her name is Ellie. She said she's interested to know what kind of techniques heart moms can use to help their children handle time when their loved one is away from home. And Andrea, I know that your husband is deployed to Afghanistan right now, so I'm going to put this question to you. How do you handle having your husband so far away from home, and how do you deal with that with your child with a heart defect?
Some of the things that we have done since Caleb is now, he's 3, he will be 4 in July. He is at an age where he definitely knows that daddy is not here and he misses him greatly. So some of the things that we have incorporated into our routine is we have a calendar where he gets to mark off. Every day he marks off an X on the day, and I have it for the whole time that Joe will be gone. So we have what's called a kiss jar, and it's a jar that has kisses from daddy written on it. And it's filled with Hershey Kisses for an approximate amount of days, with definitely a little buffer on the end, so that he gets a kiss from daddy every night after dinner. Those are just a couple things that he can, that he knows every night he gets those two things, and they bring him a little bit closer to my husband coming home. A lot of people use links where they do the chain links with construction paper, and they either start with all of them already linked and take them away, or they build them as their spouse is gone. Anything where you can get your children involved and get them to understand as much as they can the time frame. And I think that's the hardest thing for Kayla's age is 7, 8, 9 months, that means nothing to him when in the grand scheme of things. So trying to, fill jars with kisses or have a calendar so he can see his progress, I think really helps him. Now, every base will have different services that are available, and I'm trying to think of the name of the Marine Corps one, and I'll try to get that for you by the end so you can post on your website. But there are services, there are classes that you can do on bases with your children if they're having trouble coping. There's services online. There's different ideas that people have all over the place that are just at your fingertips on the computer. But I will definitely get you the name of the service at our Marine Corps base, and I'm not sure if that's service-wide, if the name of it service-wide, but I'll get you the information for you to post for those families.
That would be great, and we might even put that information in our newsletter so everyone who signs up for the newsletter can also have that. I just think that's really, really important, and that's something that's not always addressed. When you're separated from your spouse, it's such an emotional time and you have so many things that you have to do, I'm so impressed that you came up with the kisses jar. I think that's awesome. And the idea of marking off on the calendar, it makes it a little bit more salient. When you're dealing with a child 2, 3, 4 years old, time doesn't have the same meaning to them that it does once children enter school and all of a sudden they're being taught about the seasons and they're a little bit older, so they've experienced a little bit more.
You're absolutely right. And something else that I can add, too, is that we count down different holidays. I tell him in order that they're going to be coming. So as they come, I can say, okay, well, now 4th of July is here. Well, next we have this. And I kind of explain it to him that way as well. I think it's also key to keep your kids involved in the time leading up to deployments. And you can't just spring it on them last minute, or I don't think it's beneficial for them to just wake up and their dad or mom is gone. They need to have that time leading up to it where they understand this is going to happen. This is a part of our life. We will deal with it, and this is how we're going to deal with it. Also, an amazing thing to have for children are recordable books and videos. My kids have books on the iPad. I have books in their rooms. Where they can go and they can hear his voice anytime. I have videos of Joe reading to them. So things like that where his voice and his face are current and they can see him whenever they want. They also have daddy dolls. It's a little doll where it's a picture of Joe in his flight suit that they sleep with and they take everywhere. So there's things like that. There's plenty of resources, and those are things that will keep him close to their heart, and they can see him all the time. Or even our six-month-old baby, she just lights up when she sees her little doll or when I play videos.
Aww.
So it's something you can incorporate into any age, but it's definitely important for them to hear their voice and to be prepared for what's coming. If it's sprung on them, I think you'll have a harder time than you would if you prepare your children properly.
And that's true for children of any age. It's even true for adults. Nobody likes to have things sprung on them out of the blue. It makes the transition so much easier for everyone if you have a little bit of preparation and you're given some information. It's not like everything is secretive and only the grown-ups get to know this, but it's a family situation. Okay, Shelley, so now I know that you grew up in the military. I know your husband is also separated from your family. Do you have anything that you would like to add to what Andrea just shared?
Well, I think there are some definite resources out there that you can really take a look at. One of them would be Focus on the Family. If you do an internet search for them, they'll give you an idea of what they recommend for preparation times. The reality is, psychologically, children do need different amounts of time. The younger the child, the less time you want to give them to mull over a whole deployment thing. But I agree with Andrea, you don't wake up that morning and then the person leaves. So they have a guide on there by age. It's broken down by age of what psychologically tends to be the right amount of time and how to help prepare. The other thing you need to keep in mind that's unique to our heart kids is Lorelai, for example, has brain damage. So she may fit in the 9-year-old category, but developmentally in some ways she's like a 6-year-old. So I need to make sure that I keep information for her correct for a 6-year-old. And so you have to keep that in mind. That's something that's unique to our special needs community. The other thing that I would also say is, now see, we have the older kids here. So I'm dealing with an older group, and I had told Anna at the very beginning that one of the things that is a mission in our family is to serve others. So the best way for us to be able to do that is instead of us concentrating on Daddy being gone, we concentrate on how to help the veterans and wounded warriors that are here right now. And so we're helping them so that Daddy can do his job and come back to us faster, because keeping ourselves busy is keeping ourselves occupied, and then we can miss Daddy but show pride in missing him through our actions.
I love that. That's so special. And in a way, they're helping Daddy by helping the other people who work in the same part of the army. He's in the army. They're helping the whole army because they're helping the soldiers that are there. And in a distal way, it is helping Daddy because it's all part of the same program. And I really do love that. I have one more quick question because we're almost out of time. I had another person on our Facebook page who wrote in and said that her husband was deployed during her son's Glen and was able to get home through a Red Cross message, but that's not always available. Can you tell us how a family would go about contacting the Red Cross when it's appropriate and how all of that works?
Andrea, do you mind if I take this one since it's kind of protocol situation?
Yeah, absolutely. You go ahead and take that one.
Okay. It is always accessible. That is, according to the Geneva Convention, it is accessible at any point. What the issue is when is it appropriate? As Andrea had specified before, mission readiness is key to making sure that all of our service members are safe. And so there may be some times when the service member is off on a mission and unable to be contacted at the very moment, but that Red Cross information will always be there as soon as the person comes back to the forward operating base, which is also known as a FOB, or wherever it is that they're being assigned at that particular moment. Even if they're out in the field here stateside, it will always be available. It has to be available. If there is an issue with command acknowledging its availability, then it needs to be taken to the Inspector General. You'll know them as IG, and then they can take a look at the situation and see if it warrants further investigation. That has happened in the past. I hope that it doesn't happen frequently, but that is the way that you handle it. And the command, all the way from boot camp on out, they constantly stress that Red Cross messages are there and they are to be utilized, and they have very specific criterion for that.
Okay, well, thank you for answering that question so very well. That really helps people to understand a lot better that the Red Cross is there for them, but that they need to know when it's appropriate. And I'm sure their commanders and other people, like you said, talking to your neighbor, talking within your family, that you know when it's appropriate to do things, and so you follow protocol correctly. The last thing we want to do is jeopardize the people who are serving our country. So it does make sense to be very careful and use that judiciously. Well, ladies, this concludes our episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been so much fun. Well, I hope our listeners will come back next week at noon Eastern Time on Tuesday. Next week, our topic will be gastrointestinal issues or GI issues. G-tubes, NG-tubes, and NJ-tubes. Until then, please find and like us on Facebook. Check out our website, hearttoheartwithanna.com, and our Cafe Press Boutique. And remember, my friends, there is hope.